my, that's embarrassing. Wow. Joe Conroy, alcoholic. Wow, pretty cool. That's embarrassing. That's tough. I said to Cliff, I don't know if I'll be able to handle that, you know, without breaking down, because I'm not worthy of that sort of, excuse my language, but just that's just us, you know. George, thank you, man. This has been a treat so far. Ray picked me up this morning. I actually yesterday afternoon I was on the beach in Turks and Caicos down in the Caribbean. And yeah. Yeah, very close. So we're on the beach, right? Yeah. But you know, and I got in early this morning, and Ray picked me up, man, and it was really cool. Thank you, man. And then I wasn't hungry when I got in the car. And then he started talking about roasting pig and all the food you guys have here. And by the time I got here, I was starving. It was just really cool. But it's just been so cool to be here and to be with Cliff. You know, something's going to happen. I counted 11 people that this is your first or first time here, or first time in a retreat, you know. And with me and Cliff, that would make 13 first time here. But something happens here, and you guys will probably not like it Sunday, but what happens is you learn how to be an intimate human being. And you don't know what the word intimacy, what you might know what it is now, it's probably not going to mean the same thing by Sunday. And I think that's really what happens at a retreat, at a men's retreat. I'm sure it happens at a woman's retreat, I don't know, but it happens at every retreat I have ever been to. There's something transformational that happens, and hopefully that's what we're going to talk about. When he said we have no idea what we're going to talk about, we have an idea, but we don't know where it's going to go, and that's going to be up to you guys. You know, it's this power of the fellowship is really, really incredible. I've been sober since 35 years, 33 days. January 1st, 1989 was my anniversary. But I tell you, I you know, the longer you're sober, you gotta wonder, am I really an alcoholic? I was sitting there watching Cliff talk about that shot of vodka, and he put his hand up like that around the rocks. I wanted that shot of vodka. The obsession doesn't, you know, it's this the alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And then he talked about those three people he was working with that had half a drink, a quarter of a drink, and then three quarters of a drink left. But the most fascinating thing was that he said, they paid their tab. Put it on my tab. That was that. I'll get it sooner or later, you know. But this alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And, you know, for 35 years, I haven't thought a drink. I haven't needed a drink. I haven't wanted a drink. I don't believe I wanted the drink. But I've had opportunities to maybe put myself over that edge. And when I got here, I couldn't do anything. I don't know, is there anybody under a year sober here? One, two, wow. wow. I couldn't do it. I couldn't, I tell you, I hated the fellowship. I didn't like it at all. I was the type of alcoholic that had to sit at home drinking to go out drinking. I would sit there and I would listen. This is back in the 80s. I'm listening. Willie Nelson was doing all the torch song stuff, the Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain, and just the Redheaded Stranger from Blue Rock, Montana. It was just these long, slow, sad songs. And it was just pathetic. And I would drink. I've never fit anywhere in my life. I lived in an Italian neighborhood. I'm Irish Catholic. And not only Italian neighborhood in Boston, but it was a bada-bing, bada-boom Italian neighborhood. It was like it was mafiosa everywhere, and everybody thought I was a cop, you know, because I had long red hair. And what are you doing? And I attended bar. That's what I did. I wasn't a cop, you know. And I forget where I was going with that story now all of a sudden. This is it really doesn't matter. You guys are going to listen anyway. You're going to have to, you know. But it was that fitting in place. It was that fitting in place, you know. And the only thing that ever really made me fit was the alcohol. And I didn't realize that 100 forms of fear and self-delusion that Bill talks about is a lot. Think about that. 100 forms. The way Bill wrote was very subtle. And 100 forms of fear and self-delusion is a lot when you think about it. It's a lot. And driven by fear, driven by alcohol, driven by all the stuff that got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. The fear and the self-delusion was the thing that kept me away from society. When you were talking about the page 52, the bedevilments, you know, the having trouble with emotional natures, can't seem to be of help to other people, got full of fear. That's not when I'm drinking. When I'm drinking, I don't worry about that stuff. That takes away the fear. It takes away, you know, when you're drinking, you can have conversation. But getting sober, when I'm not drinking, fear of people and economic insecurity overwhelms me. When I'm not drinking, just the fear of tomorrow overwhelms me. The bedevilments are just so powerful. That's what Cliff was talking about. This just being sober is so, so difficult. And this language, when I came in here, I just couldn't stand the fellowship because I was afraid. I didn't know that. My arms were either in my pocket or crossed. My head was down. I couldn't look at anybody in the eye. And I'd see hundreds of people in the room. And you know there's not hundreds. You know, I would walk up to a door of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd see these people standing at the door, and they were happy. And I'm just miserable. I am just miserable without a drink. It was just an awful way. But what happened was, years before, so I like you, I have to talk about the drinking. Sometimes people just get in here, and they just want to talk about how wonderful it is to be sober. But you got to get to that place of what I was like. Not what it was like. If I focused on what it was like, I'd be talking about the material stuff. I'd be talking about all the things that I wish I had, that I wish somebody would give me. But when I talk about what I was like sitting at home, getting drunk to go drinking, that's fear-based. You know, not. I'm not going to tell you what I made, how much money I had, all that sort of stuff, the cars, the stuff. That stuff is all going to disappear. But that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body that Bill talks about is never going to go away unless I tell you guys so you can identify. You might not identify with my story. My story is very different than Cliff's. I don't have a photographic mind. All I ever heard when I was a kid was my mother said, "You have a face that only a mother could love." Therefore, I hated photos, right? I to this day, I can't stand a picture of myself. It's just really weird. But that, and I could barely read. So when Cliff gets up here, then I immediately want to go, I'm just not like him. I don't belong here. And if you're like that, you belong here. The moment you say, I am not like, I wish I was, you belong here. If you're separating yourself from us, don't do it. Just be yourself. Be yourself in Alcoholics Anonymous. So many people want to be somebody else. They want to hear a big speaker. They go home and they memorize the words that they say, and they go to a meeting and then they say it. And people go, "Oh my God, you're wonderful. Can you tell me more?" Well, I don't know if there is any more. You know, that was all I remember. You know, but when you tell your story, what you were like, what happened, and what you're like now, there's an identification process that happens, and not everybody's going to identify. There's going to be one person, maybe, that identifies with your seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And you might never know who that person is. That's the spiritual significance of anonymity. We come in here and tell our story so we can sacrifice the material and concentrate on the spiritual. We concentrate on that transformation from where I was to where I am today. And that takes the most difficult, the most disappointing thing if you're new, it takes T-I-M-E. Oh my God, look at the young people that are coming in now. And you go, how much time do you have? So I'm 35 years, so 35. Me and George were walking back from lunch and from dinner, and he said, how much time? I said, 35. He says, I just got 41. I didn't see the guy over there smoking. He goes, Jesus Christ, you guys are older than we are. You're longer sober than I'm alive. And I go, wow. And I bet the longer I'm sober, the more spring gets in my step, the more life that gets into my soul. That they talk about, we all talk about, that transformation from the head to the heart. And I think that's what we're going to try to focus on this weekend. This from academic to experiential. Your heart is the thing that keeps you alive. Your head, if you were to be brain dead, you could stay alive on a machine for years. If your heart goes, you're done. Think about that. And if you're trying to figure this out, you're not living in the faith that Cliff was talking about at the end. If you're trying to figure AA out, you're not living in faith. Faith is like just, it is blind in here. It's blind in here. And you come in and you hear people tell their story, and you might go, wow, that's amazing. And the guy next to you go, this is bull. And then the person next to him would go, oh my God, this is unbelievable. And the person next to them would go, this is crap. You never know what's going to be said or what's going to be heard in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. But you just, when you stop that judging and you just let it go, you just let it be, wow. I think that's what Bill talks about, being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. And that's the right here and the right now. When I said I was on the beach in Turks and Caicos yesterday, you want to know something? It was the same sun and it was the same moon. It was the same. It was, the temperature was different, but the spirit is always where we're at. It's in that place. It's in the now. It's right here. And when I first got sober, I didn't know that. And when I was drinking, I didn't want that. I wanted, when I told you I was sitting at home with the Willie Nelson, and I was probably rolling something so I could go out for a walk, but I'm listening to this album, and I'm just getting sad, and Jesus, and I'm drinking red wine, and red wine's the worst for an alcoholic, because Christ, it's just awful. And then you go, I might as well make a couple of phone calls, right? And I started calling. And my brother was living out in California, and I would call him, and he goes, hi, how you doing, Joe? Oh, Jerry. Oh, Christ. And it would go on from there, and he would hear Willie in the background. He goes, how's Willie doing? Oh, Jesus. You know, it was just it would just, and there'd be just this pathetic conversation. You know, it's just like, it's like if you're sponsoring somebody brand new and the phone rings and the first thing you hear is, oh, thanks for picking up. Oh, Christ, get out of here. What did I do around here? You know? what is it? What did she, what did he, what did it do? You know, oh, my God, you know. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, thank you, man. You're saving my life. Oh, yeah, okay. Come on, the other. Christ, here we go, you know. But I have to tell you that because I was so afraid I couldn't do it. I couldn't ask anybody for help. It just wasn't in my nature. Those three words, I need help, were really, really difficult for me to say. I just didn't like being here. When I tell you I didn't like the joy. I didn't like the fellowship. I didn't like anything about it. And I used to go to meetings, and they were just torturous. I remember, and it was the same way when I was drinking, too. When I put the two together, that drinking before I go drinking just to be drinking, was just 100 forms of fear. And the same way I would do that when I would walk to an AA meeting. I was smoking at the time, and I would walk up to the door, and you hear the music. You hear the AA is kind of like an orchestra. A symphony orchestra, if you think about it. Just think about it for a minute. When you were talking to Cliff, I was thinking about the music of AA. And it's almost like, but then go back to the music of the symphony orchestra is kind of like a newcomer's head. Because when you go to hear a symphony and you get there early enough, you can hear them all tuning up all at once. It is noisy. It is clanging. It's banging, and it's just, and it's just the tubas, the brass, the violas, the violins, the timp, they're all, it's just noise, it's just nothing, it's awful. And all of a sudden, somebody comes and walks up on stage, and everybody sits upright, like an AA meeting, and they say the Lord's Prayer or the Serenity Prayer, and all of a sudden, it's just this beautiful music starts flowing out of people. And that's why we want the newcomers to, we want you to stand, we want you to tell you your name, we want you to get you just to focus on the one thing, and it might only be yourself. But what happens then is the boob that was called his sponsor, and he said, Jesus, I'm so glad you picked up the phone, and the sponsor just wants to get him off the phone. He said, God, what do I do? You going to a meeting tonight? Oh, I wasn't thinking about it. Jesus, go to the meeting. Please, go. Yeah, just... And say hi to the newcomer. Jesus, I don't know who they are. We ask them before every meeting to stand up and give us their name. Oh, that's right. Remember one name, and then go up and ask him how he's doing. What am I going to say then? I don't know. Just go up and ask him how he's doing. And it's just an amazing, you got these two whack jobs that are standing there looking at the ground. Right? What are you doing, you know? And all of a sudden... Those two whack jobs don't see the other 100 people in the room. They feel the presence of one. That handshake gives us the power of the now. And that's really what it is, that handshake, when you reach out to that person. That's why the people are at the door. They're looking for a guy like me, trying to figure out how to get into the room without going through that line. How do I get in there without having to say hi to everybody? And then they go through the line, and they go, how you doing? I'm good, next. You know, get through there. And then some boob remembers your name. And there's something powerful about that when somebody says, Joe, it's good to see you at this meeting again. I haven't seen you at any other meetings. No, this is the only one I know of. Well, we go here, and we go there, and we go to Denny's. Really? We all go to Denny's after the meeting. You're kidding, right? No, we go to Denny's. For how long? Forever.
Boy, it felt like that, didn't it?
Oh, geez, really? Yeah, yeah. I think Denny's might have got more people sober than Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. Just, okay, I'll never drink again if I don't have to come back here. You know what I mean? That 3 o'clock in the morning when you're going, oh, my God, look, and you got to get up early in the morning. But that's the ritual of the spiritual in AA. The ritual is to say hi, to keep them coming back, to keep them going to Denny's, to bring them to another meeting, to help them find their own music, to help them find their own tribe. And that's really what happened to me in here. I couldn't fit. I was so riddled with that fear and self-delusion. And, oh, my God, I hate this thing. And there was a time when I was about 11 months sober. I'm getting way ahead. I'm going to go back to my drinking here in a minute. When I just hated being sober. If you haven't figured out, I'm not from Southern California, right? You guys know that, right? I moved to San Diego from Boston in my first and only geographic, and I've been sober ever since. Let me go back. Well, I might as well go back to that. So this guy, I tended bar in Boston for years, and I worked in a comedy club. And this guy, Dick Dougherty, I'm going to use his last name because he passed away during COVID. He was a member of AA. He was 8 years sober. And when I was younger, he owned a place down in Cape Cod called the Crystal Palace, which still gives me goosebumps when I say Crystal Palace, you know. And not that I've ever done it, but I've seen people that do it, and they're goofy, you know. And anyway, and it was one of those places that it was $2 for all the beer you can drink. This is years ago when they used to be able to, can you imagine that? Alcoholic. And I used to, $2 for all, and it was always the nasty beer, right? If you wanted a high shelf, you had to pay for it, but $2 to get in the door. And this guy was the biggest moron I'd ever met in my life. I just didn't like him. I didn't think he was a funny comedian. He discovered incredibly successful comedians in Boston, but he was one of those guys that just stayed local and opened these small little comedy clubs, and that was it. He didn't have any, he had aspirations to go bigger, but as I look back on it, he was being of service to alcoholic comedians. He got them a place to do their trade, and then he convinced them through attraction to get sober in AA. It was crazy. So I didn't like this guy, but he ran this club, and this one night I had a really difficult time drinking behind the bar. By the last 2.5 years of my drinking, I never wanted anybody to see me drink, but behind the bar, I started getting so afraid of what it was like to not be behind the bar that I had to have a few cocktails behind the bar. And it was really one of those powerful, powerful things. And then this one night, nothing was working. None of the combination I was working, and I saw him leaving. And I said, Dick, I need some help. He says, what's wrong? I says, I think I'm an alcoholic. And this is midnight on a Saturday in downtown Boston. He goes, Jesus Christ, it looks like you picked a fine time to figure that one out, you know? And I said, what do I do? And he did what we all do. He says, here's my phone number. Call me tomorrow and we'll talk about it. And then I did what we all do is I looked at his phone number and I tossed it when I got home. Because when I got home, I didn't have the problem. I wanted help then. I wanted the hand of AA then. I need your help now. It didn't come. Pew. Gone. But I don't think AA is magical. I think it's mysterious. Magic is a trick. I really do, and it's something that can be taught. The mystery of AA is profound, I think. Why one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic really, really worked. Why did the fact that Bill walked into the Mayflower to maybe drink, who knows, but he wanted to be sober more, and then he reached out. Bill reached out to find somebody. There was no Dr. Bob then. Dr. Bob wasn't even in his memory, didn't even know. He wanted to not drink. Maybe this is the same way that Dick D said to me, call me, we'll talk about this. And I didn't call him, and I didn't talk about it, but one time I was along the Charles River in Boston, and I ran into him. And I had been avoiding him for months. And I ran into him, and he said, Joe, how you doing? I said, I'm doing good, man. How you doing? You know? Oh, I'm fine. And he said, how you doing with that problem? Oh, what problem are you talking about? You talked to me that one night about your drinking. Oh, Jesus, Dick, I had a problem at the bar. I had a problem at the bar. I needed help. He said, I don't know if you're an alcoholic, Joe. And then he did the mysterious thing of Alcoholics Anonymous. He started to tell me his story. And if you ain't done, if you ain't done drinking, Gene Castle in San Diego used to say there's only two ways you can come into AA, drinking or done drinking. And if you ain't done drinking, nothing we say or do is going to help you. I don't know if that's necessarily true, because Dick talked to me for, I talk about it was like an hour. It might have been 20 minutes. It might have been 2 minutes. I don't know. But he made something attractive to me. He saw me with my arms crossed and my head looking down after a couple of minutes. And he said, Joe, I don't know if you're an alcoholic. He said, I don't know, but you asked me for help one night with alcohol. I've been sober for 8 years. Everybody that works for me is a sober member of AA. And he started talking about the process of AA, the transformation that happens in here when you admit that you have a problem with alcohol. And he said, I don't know if you're done. He says, but I do know that if when you are done, you ask some power greater than yourself for help, you'll never have to take another drink as long as you live. Those were the words that I've never forgotten, and those were the words that scared the hell out of me. I didn't want to be connected with a power greater than myself. And I kind of gave him the finger in my head, and then I literally packed my bags and moved out of the city of Boston and came to San Diego, where I knew absolutely nobody. I just wanted to be so far away from Boston that I just leave me alone. I was either going to move to Camden, Maine, which is about 4 hours north of Boston on the coast. And this is in November of 1988, and Maine is pretty cold and snowy, as you are up here. And I had friends up there, and we used to drink a lot. Or I would go to San Diego, where I knew absolutely nobody. And I was going to get a job driving a tour bus. That was it. And I ended up getting in a car with my brother, and I drove all the 3,000 miles out to San Diego. And I bought a 63 Ford Falcon station wagon. And I put an egg crate in the back of it, and I slept in the back of it for about 2 months. I didn't call myself homeless. I was exploring. And there came a moment of clarity on January 1st, 1989. The guy that I was going to work for driving the tour bus called me up on New Year's Eve. They left a message. I actually didn't want to live in the car that night, so I got a hotel room for $19. Downtown San Diego 35 years ago was like every downtown city, just nobody wanted to live there. And it was a lot of joints, a lot of strip clubs and joints, and just a wonderful place for drunks. Just I could still smell the smell of a bar. Not a lounge, a bar. You know that it's so distinct. I think somebody should bottle that. You can it would cross your eyes if you would walk in now. It's just my God, did I used to drink in here? Yeah. And anyway, I called him back on New Year's Day, and he said, Joe, we can't hire you anymore because you had too much alcohol in your system when you did your analysis. And I think I was waiting for proof. When Dick said to me, Joe, there'll come a time when you're done with drinking, but I wasn't done with drinking. But when somebody says you got too much alcohol in your system, that was a slap in my face, and I haven't had a drink since then. That morning, January 1st, 1989, I remember sitting on the edge of my bed after I got off that phone call, and I wrote. There was a guy named Robert Bly who was doing men's workshops, way 40 years ago. This is like. These guys would go out in the woods and strip down naked and beat their drums and beat whatever they wanted to beat. But anyway, it was just like, it was a big, and the big thing was journaling, right? So I remember trying to journal, and I could barely read, I could barely write, but I did write, my God, I'm an alcoholic. I need help. And I was all alone. I absolutely knew a soul, didn't know a soul in San Diego. It was just, it was really this, When Bill talks about the quicksand just circling around us and just this pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization and the loneliness that only an alcoholic can know. And I remember a couple of weeks earlier, I had written, where do all the alcoholics go? I'm still drinking. Why would I write that? Where do all the alcoholics go? Look around. I mean, no, where do all the lonely people go? That's what I wrote, not all the alcoholics. Where do all the lonely people go? And this loneliness that we talked about, that only an alcoholic can know, the loneliness of like being in a, I'll use my own experience, being in a Red Sox game and feeling like I'm the only person in the stadium. That loneliness, that pitiful loneliness. And I felt that same way when I came to AA at first. And it was ripping me apart. Just ripping me, and I couldn't surrender to the fellowship. I didn't like anybody in here, and I don't need you people. Please, somebody help me. You know, that desperation on your face. And then some boob, without question, will walk up to you and say, how you doing? Oh, God, I'm terrible. I'm awful. I hate this place. What's going on? I hate this place. And you start to, I want to go drink. And then they start to tell you their story. I don't want to hear another story. And all of a sudden, something happens. Something happens. That head to the heart happens in the conversation. That's what Cliff was talking about. We don't know what we're going to do. We're going to have a conversation. We're going to really talk about our experience, what we were like, what we are like now. How do we get to where we want to be? What is the action that you have to take? The first step in the 12 and 12, in the 12th step in the 12 and 12 says, joy of living is our code, but action is the key word. Oh, I hated the word joy. And I remember talking to a guy, because he would, Milton Merrill Edward Joseph Giberson, God bless and rest his soul, he used to stand at the men's meeting on Sunday morning, every Sunday morning, and say, my name is Milton Merrill Edward Joseph Giberson, and the joy of living is my code, and action is the key word. Every single time he stood at the podium. And this one day he said, Joe, you seem to cringe when I say that. And I said, well, I hate the word joy. He said, well, why? I said, because I hate Christmas. He says, what's that got to do with it? He says, with joy to the world. Oh. So he walked me back. I hated Christmas because I was my dad died when I was 12 years old. I found him dead in bed on my birthday. And it was from that point, I had five other brothers. And from that point, there was no joy in my life at all. There was absolutely no joy. My dad died. He was 47. My mom lived till she was 100 years old. She never took her wedding ring off, ever. She had a love that I wish I could ascribe to. I wish she had that. And I think that AA is giving me that. It's giving me that thing. But when I said to Milt, I can't stand joy, and I started telling him why. He said, wow, Joe, this is the past. He says, if you get in here and you start practicing these principles in all your affairs, you're going to be able to wipe away and clear away the records of your past, whether it's in your head or in your pocketbook or somewhere, but you're going to find the P-E-A-C-E that Alcoholics Anonymous talks about, the peace. He said, most people come in here and they're looking for a P-I-E-C-E, and that will get up and walk away from you soon when they find out who you are. And I went, oh, my God, the peace of mind, the peace of the joy of living. And he was one of those people that, you know, God, I believe, you know, everybody talks about saints and all that, and Eskimos. You can tag them any way you want. It is the love of the alcoholic that Alcoholics Anonymous really makes profound for me. My sponsor has been using an acronym for love that I absolutely adore. It's listen, overlook, value, and encourage. And think about it. When you come to an AA meeting, you listen to the people that are sharing. Hopefully, you have to overlook some of the things that they're saying because you're not identifying with them. You don't have to judge them. You can overlook them. Change of the word. 6 and 7. The negative is I'm going to judge. The new word is I'm going to overlook. And then you're going to value those things that you really, really like. And then you encourage the people to keep coming back. They did it to me. And when these boobs come walking up to me and they say, hey, we go to this meeting, we go to that meeting, we go here, will you come with us? I go, sure, I would love to. I didn't want to. I needed to find that. I wanted to find what they had. And nobody ever gave me what they had. They said, this is what I do. This is what we do so we can recover from the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Seemingly is the key word. Not hopeless. We're all hopeless because we don't have faith. And when you take that seemingly, go, oh my God, it's really not that bad, and you take that and you put it into your heart, then you get the hope that, wow, I can come back tomorrow. Like you were talking with the laundry soap. If that laundry soap didn't work, would he buy it? No. If AA didn't work, I wouldn't buy it. I wouldn't keep coming back. I wouldn't find this, what do you call it? Bill called it indescribably wonderful, and there is a solution. Like the passengers of a shipwreck, they find it indescribably wonderful. When the passengers of a shipwreck, and they get into that boat, that survival, the AA meeting is a survival for people that are struggling with life. They're struggling with a way of life which is alcoholic. And when you take the alcohol away from the alcoholic, we have a tough time living. We have a tough time dealing with things. We have a tough time trying to understand. I want to figure out. I got to do. Oh, my God. What are they going to do? Are they going to call on me? I wish they would call me because this. I'm really good in this topic. Jesus, I wish they would. Don't call on that guy over there. Oh, they're going to call on him again. There he goes again. He's going to say the same thing. Why don't they call on me? I'm sitting over here. My head's getting higher and higher. I wish somebody would call on me. How about the guy down there with the red hair? Oh, God, I got nothing to say. Thanks. No. Jesus Christ. Whoa, just the fear just overwhelms me because I think I don't have anything. And when you think like that, your ego is taken over again. It's eased God out. It's eased God out, the ego, because you're thinking you're going to try to help everybody in the room, and you can't. You can't do it. I'll never forget, I talked at a conference in Dallas. Now, I'll never forget when my first sponsor, when I finally was about 3 years sober, when I first finally asked somebody for help, 3 years sober, that's a long time. And it was so embarrassing because we went to his house for dinner and he said, will you do me a favor? Will you go read How It Works while I'm cooking dinner? Sure. He's going, what are you looking for? The big book's right on his table. I'm looking for that piece of paper. What piece of paper? The piece of paper that everybody reads How It Works off of. He goes, it's in the big book. It is? Yeah. You didn't know that? No, I thought they were just reading it off a piece of paper. And from that point on, that was 32 years ago, he says, if you ever get asked to read How It Works, I want you to pick the book up and read it from the book, because a lot of people don't know that it comes out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I go, you got to be kidding me. He goes, no. They pretend, but they don't. And he said, you just proved it to me. And then I picked up the book that he gave me, and I tried to read it, and I said, Eugene, I can't really read. Oh. And I thought he was going to shame me. And he goes, you want some help? I said, yeah. I said, why? He said, because I couldn't read either when I got here. And my sponsor helped me read it. And I go, well, how? And then he turned mean. He said he made me call him every morning at 6 o'clock and read one page of the big book to him. And I went, oh God, thank God. Why? I said, because I don't get up at 6 o'clock. I did. From then on, I did, you know. I called him once at 6:05. 6 o'clock tomorrow, click. And I swear to God, it was the best thing that anybody could have ever done for me. Because I, if you think you have to be perfect in AA, get rid of that idea. We're going to talk about old ideas. Get rid of that old idea that if you can brace your imperfection, that you'll be rocketed. You'll be wearing the cape of AA. You know, if you, it's just an amazing thing what happens when you can just be yourself and strip yourself naked of all pretense and defense and trust that the fellowship of AA is going to help you and be with you and not hurt you. That's a big thing, especially for guys. I don't need to be hurt. I don't need to be helped. I rode motorcycles when I got here. I wore leather and I was scared to death in a meeting of AA. And I'll never forget this. The first person I asked to sponsor me was a guy named shit, I can't remember his name now. Dale. And I asked him to sponsor. I'm going to drink this. I have it in my hand. And I asked him to sponsor me, I think about 6 months sober. And what was weird about it was he never once called me. Not once did he call me. Not once did he call me. And I was dying. And I hated him. And I resented him because I didn't call him, now, mind you, and I didn't see him at a meeting from the time I asked him to sponsor me. And then this one night, I was about 2 weeks shy of 1 year of sobriety. And in Southern California, they make a big deal about the sobriety. They give cakes, and it's just a big presentation. It's a big production. It just irritates me to this day. It still does. I don't know why. It just does. But the one that really irritates me, when more than one person gives one person a cake, and there was a guy that I saw in meetings that had 2 weeks more than me, and he was getting a one-year cake. And I'm sitting in the meeting, and I'm not very happy. I'm pretty angry. And I showed up, and I parked the bike right out front, and I made a lot of noise, so everybody knew I was coming in. Well, here he comes again, Mr. Happy. And I sat down, and this guy, Rick, who's actually a great friend of mine. He's about this big, and he was a marine biologist. And I really liked him, but I hated him at the same time. Now, I hated him because I always wanted to be a marine biologist, right? But I never could do the work to get to be what he had. So he always pissed me off. And he's sitting next to me, and he says, Joe, how you doing? And I got my arms crossed. I'm going, I'm doing pretty good. And I said, you know that I can't remember the guy's name, Richard's getting a cake tonight, and two of his sponsees are giving him a cake, and he's just a year sober. And he goes, oh, that's cool. I go, that's bullshit. Why? I said, it's ridiculous. Two people giving one person a cake. It's okay, Joe, relax. No, I think it's ridiculous. I need to change this. I don't like the way this is going anymore. So I'm sitting there with my arms crossed, and as my arms are crossed, Rick is sitting next to me. He's like, everything okay? Everything's fine. The guy that I asked to sponsor me, Dale, comes in, and he's sitting right behind me. And he says, Joe, how you doing? Good, good, I'm fine. Thanks. I asked you to sponsor me, nothing. No calls, no nothing. And all of a sudden, the joy comes from the front of the room that everybody's so happy to see this guy take 1 year cake. And I start getting pissed, and I'm starting to get angry, and the veins were popping in my head. And Rick goes, Joe, are you okay? I'm fine. Just leave me alone. I'm fine. I'm just a little irritated what's going on. I don't like what's going on. I can't stand this. I'm going to change a lot of this stuff. And then Dale behind me goes, Joe, is everything all right? I'm fine. I'm dying here of alcoholism. Why don't you do something about it? It's just going nuts. It's just compound. And I'll tell you what, you don't want to do this to somebody who's in there. Dale reached out and he touched me on the shoulder. And I'm in my leathers and I'm riding and I started to cry. Oh God, it was just, and I was crying. And then Dale says, come on, let's go outside. And as I stood up, it was in a hall with linoleum floors. And remember those old metal chairs, those Catholic school chairs, that's what I called them. And my belt buckle hooked on the chair as I jumped up really quick. And it literally flew up in the air and came crashing down. Now, I don't like people. And the whole room turned and looked at me, right? And I'm just like... And Dale's going, come on, let's go. He goes outside, and we're standing out front of the room, and I'm just bawling, just snot ball. Whoa, what was that all about? And he said, I think you just took the third step of Alcoholics Anonymous. What? He says, I think you made a decision to stick around. I went, what? And he goes, Joe, I haven't heard a word from you. I haven't seen you in any meetings that we go to. I didn't know if you were ever going to stay sober, if you've been sober. I've been sober 11 and a half months. And just angry. And he stood there and he says, man, you asked me to sponsor you. I don't know if you're willing to do it. He says, I'll tell you what. Let me see what this does. If you can go to a men's meeting, a 12 and 12 meeting, a big book meeting, and then I want you to do a speaker meeting, that's four, and then fill in the rest of the week with three others and see what happens. And maybe I can work with you. Oh, if you think that's what I can do, I can do. You want to know something? I've been doing that for 33 years. And I have never seen that man again. The man that I asked to sponsor me that didn't. Gave me the gift because I said I need help in the only way I could, by getting angry at a guy that was taking a cake. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't matter how you get there. And I'll tell you what, I've been doing that ever since. And I don't go to seven meetings a week anymore. I don't do that. But the big book, the 12 and 12, the speaker meeting, and now thank God with Zoom, me and Cliff, I go to a, it's 5 a.m. in the morning, it's out of Minneapolis, the Rojo Group, it's a men's meeting out of Minneapolis, it's 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm up at 3:30 in the morning, and I get on that meeting, and I'm just like, it has changed my, what's his name, Don Majors used to say, if you're in a storm, change the attitude of the wings, If you're in a sailboat and it's about to tip, change the attitude of the rudder and the sail. You'll get back on course. If you're struggling inside Alcoholics Anonymous, get to a meeting and change your attitude. Get to a meeting and make the coffee. Get to the meeting and be of maximum service. Don't go to the meeting and try to be served. That's not going to work for you. When you take that action and you just turn around and you do something for somebody else, that fourth dimension of existence that Bill talks about is not at the top of the hill. It's not in a shiny car. It's not with a big paycheck. It's not with a big girlfriend. It's not with a big boyfriend. It's not with any of that. It's with yourself. And you can find that place where you can just be. When I first got sober, everybody was reading the Jonathan Livingston Seagull book. I don't know if you did that here. That was just the goofiest. It was a book about seagulls. Jesus, what a stupid book to be reading, right? And it had pictures in it. And it was really thin. My God, it's really about what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. When you come in here and don't think you can do it, you can't do it. You know, like, I can't. That's what that encouragement and love is. Several years ago, I was traveling around the world for my job, and I was opening up, it was just a goofy job, but I was in Hong Kong, and I was opening up a law firm in Hong Kong. And in Hong Kong, it's really, if you've never seen it, it's really steep. It makes San Francisco look flat. It's like really steep hills and really humid. Really, really humid. And the meeting was in an old sanitarium at the top of the hill. That's where the meeting was every day. I can't think of the name of the place. And everybody says, you can take a cab. It'll cost you $35 to get it. I'm going, I can't pay $35 to go to an AA meeting in a cab. What are you, out of your mind? I'll walk. I'll show you guys, right? The first time I started walking, and I'm walking, and I'm walking, oh, God, and I'm walking in the sweat, the humidity. It's just, and I get up to the meeting, and everybody goes, you didn't want to pay the $35, did you? I go, I'm not going to pay $30. He goes, you know, $35 in Hong Kong money is $3.25, right? Really? Your old ideas will kill you. Trust me, they'll kill you. And then this other time I wanted to walk the hill, and everybody goes, oh, you can go down there, and there's a great path that takes you to the top. It's really a paved path. And I said, I can do that. You know, so I started walking up the hill, and it's steep, and it's humid, and I'm like, and these little Asian ladies would go by me about 100 miles an hour. Hi, how are you? Hi, I'm going, oh, catch you. You can't be walking by me like that. And I go another 100 yards, and then somebody else would be coming down. Hi, pretty steep, huh? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Yo. And I wanted to give up. I just wanted to give up. So I would try to get up. And they'd go by me. You want some help? No, I'm fine. You know, and I'm just going by me hundreds of miles. And I'm just like, oh, and I finally get to the top. And I am drenched in sweat and stank. You know, that awful stank. And I go into this place that was selling T-shirts. And they were all in Cantonese is what they speak in Hong Kong. It was all in Cantonese writing. And I saw this one that had my size. And I said, I'll take that one. And I said, can I change this? She said, sure. So I went in the back and I ripped off my shirt that was just stanking. And I put on this brand new shirt. And I go, oh, it fits beautifully. And I come back out and I pay for it. I go, wait, what the hell does that say? And she says, don't give up. I was like, wow, really? Really? You know? And that's really what it is here, you know. Don't give up. Don't give up before the miracle happens. Don't expect it to happen. Just have the faith that Cliff was talking about. Faith is mysterious. It doesn't have to be the God. If you've got a resentment against religion, it's against religion. If it's against the church, it's against the church. Think about that. Those are material places and things. Those are material. The God of your understanding is whatever it is. In the big book, it says God either is or he isn't. And then the question is, what is your choice to be? It's not believe. What is your choice to be? I don't believe. Good. We can work with that. We can work with that. It doesn't say the agnostic. It says we agnostics. That chapter is called We Agnostics. It's about finding the power. And that's what this is all about, the power. Where is that power? And it says deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. The fundamental, and I remember talking to my sponsor, I don't like that word fundamental. Why? He says, because it just scares me. This fundamental religions and politics and people. And he goes, that's an old idea, Joe. It's not, it's my idea. He says, break the word down. what's the most important word in there? And I go, fun? And he goes, demental. And I went, what? He says, demental obsession will keep you in bondage of self. And it is fun. The fundamental idea of God is that power that's deep within us, you know. And the Hindus and the Indians say, you know, namaste, the God inside of me recognizes the God inside of you. You know, and we're going to do meditation, and it's so important, I believe, for everybody. I know somebody's going to be leading a great meditation class on Sunday morning, guys. It's going to be the best one you've ever been to. It's going to be the best. No, you're not going to do it now? Oh, you're going to do it, man. But this meditation practice, I think people want to, they don't want to, oh, I don't want to sit in the lotus position. Sit on the toilet then. You know, it doesn't, just get a moment where you just talk about the toilet, where you find pure joy. Just sit, oh, you know, just, oh my God, what a relief that is. But the you don't have to complicate the meditation process. Wilson used to walk the streets of Brooklyn and count the cracks in the road. Our great metaphysical founder used to walk the streets of Brooklyn and count the cracks in the road because he realized that was one pointed thing. I was focusing on one thing. Think about it. When you come into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, most of the time, the first thing that you hear is how it works. And most of the time, you walk, look around the room and everybody goes, Jesus, they're going again. They're going to read how it works. Close your eyes the next time and listen to the words. It's not the same. It is not the same. People use different words for, you know, the big thing is that step 9. 50 to 75% of the, every time you see people says they say the word whenever possible rather than wherever possible. 50 to 75, I've counted it. It's crazy. And they go, you're kidding me. And they go, yeah, listen. All of a sudden they're like this. And they go, my God, he said whenever possible. And I said, there's a big difference to me between whenever and wherever. Wherever is a spiritual place when I put all these principles in my fear and I practice them all. And that wherever, like when we get to that having had the spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, when we, that's the wherever. That's the place where we can go, oh, it is not about them, is it? And that whenever is a time. And I talked about time earlier. It's precious and it's weird at the same time. This forcing this thing doesn't happen. And I find that life that is, that Bill calls indescribably wonderful, and I kind of just let it sit back. And then when I sit and listen to how it works, and it's really wonderful how some people miss the words. Oh, you know when they don't read the numbers? Oh my God, you could talk about it. Let's never ask him again to read how it works. Why? He didn't read the numbers. You know what the numbers are, right? You know, but it's just, but when you close your eyes, there's something about that moment. It's something about that moment that I go, oh, this is, and it might be the only time. It's 3 minutes, 20 seconds. That's how long it reads, how it works to read. 3 minutes and 20 seconds. It might be the only time you get a chance to read, to meditate. And then I'll tell you something really weird. There are two recordings of Bill Wilson reading How It Works. You can Google it. You want to know something? In one of them, he reads it perfectly. In the other one, he says, whenever possible. The man who wrote the steps say whenever. There's just this quirky little thing, and I'm not going to go into the rest of that because I know why they do it, because I've analyzed it, you know. Yeah. And I want to prove it to you. See, you know. But it's the fellowship. If you're struggling with the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, what's happening is you're trying to resist the crave. You know, it's the same way. Think about when before I gave up drinking, I wanted to crave alcohol. The obsession of the mind is one thing. The physical allergy, you know, when I take that drink, that's when I need another drink. You know, when I was thinking about Cliff talking about that vodka, I didn't obsess on it. It was really kind of, it was like a romance in the stone. It's, oh my God. But it was just the whole thing. Because literally, I think only an alcoholic knows what a vodka shot glass looks like. Only an alcoholic. Every other people, oh, you know, I had a big tumbler. No. I saw the crystal on the bottom. I saw the ice chinkling and everything. And it was just like, and I used to drink absolute vodka. And I had it in the freezer. And if you're thinking of drinking, don't listen to this part of it. So I used to have it in the freezer. And there's those times when you wake up in the middle of the night and you feel like somebody's pooped in your mouth and you go find something. And I used to go to the freezer. It was almost like a baby. I'd take that little bottle and I'd put it. Oh, I've missed you so much. Click. Oh, and if it's frozen, there's something vodka. It's coating. It's wonderful. It really is, actually. But 35 years, and I can still see that. It's a blue. It's clear. It's wonderful. But anyway, yeah. But I don't think of drink anymore. I don't want to drink. I don't need a drink because I've put these principles in my life. Not only the 12-step principles, the 12 principles behind the traditions. The traditions. If you're struggling with AA, sit down with somebody else and read the 12 traditions. Read them out loud because I don't want to read that. And if you go through that, and if you're really struggling with AA, sit down and read the concepts, the 12 concepts. You got to read them out loud. And you probably got to sit with a lawyer, because it's like, what does that mean? Wow, it's so you know. But but if you're really struggling, we're going to talk about some of this. The concept 9 in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially in the retreat, talks about the leadership in AA and how leadership can help you recover more and more and more from the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. The 12th step is the key to your success in sobriety. It is the key. So many people I know that I've taken them through the 12 steps, and I go, "Are you taking anybody else?" "No, I don't have the time." I worked the 12 steps with you, and it's just been a wonderful job. I've recovered. And I go to meetings, but I don't have the time to help anybody. And then they come up to you 6 months later, and they go, "Hey, could you take me through the steps again?" Sure. If you find somebody else to take them through, because I'm not going to give it to you again unless you're going to give it away. Well, that's awful mean. No, it's not. I want you, this whole thing is about carrying this message to other people. And it's not what we want to do. I was talking to a guy down in Turks, and he goes, and I told him I was coming up here to Minnesota. He says, "What are you, out of your mind?" I go, "No, they asked me to do it." And I says, "Yes." And he goes, "That's why I don't want to work." He's only worked up to the fifth step. He says, "I don't want to go any further because I don't want to work with other people." And Cliff, he's a lawyer. I know, yeah. But it's really, and I go, "Oh my God, you don't know what you're missing." Because it's not, you don't have to work with as many people as we do. You don't have to do this. You just have to be of maximum service to God and our fellows. Maximum on page 77, that's a big verb. Maximum is a lot, but you don't have to be my maximum or Cliff's maximum or George's maximum. You have to be your own maximum. What are you willing to do? There was a great movie. What was it, that one was Sean Connery and one that took place in Chicago? Was it The Untouchables? And Sean Connery, remember, he always said, "What are you prepared to do?" when he was dying on his deathbed. "What are you prepared to do?" This is the 12 steps prepare us to help somebody else get rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. That's what it does. It doesn't prepare you to take this and hoard it. It prepares you to give it away. You give it away and you give it away and you give it away. Everybody goes, "Oh, I'm giving it all away." No, you got it all to give. You just keep doing it. And don't have any expectations that they're going to do it. Don't make demands upon it, and don't do it on yourself. And I say, like when Bill reached out to Bob, did he expect Bob to get sober? Who knows? But he wanted to be sober and stay sober. And when Bob said, "I'll give him 15 minutes. And when they were sitting there, Bob goes, "Oh my God, this guy knows what he's really talking about. He's telling my story." And what did they do? Did they go and say, "Let's go have a piece of cake, Bill"? "No, let's go find another corker," as they say in the big book. And they found Bill D. Bill D was done. "I don't ever want anybody's help." And they say, "Hey, there's two guys from AA." There wasn't AA then. "They're here to help you." "Ah, what do they know?" And he was a really big Catholic. So think about it. Bill was a non-believer. Bob was a big Christian. The third guy was a really big Catholic. He was a deacon in the church, I think. And all of a sudden, there's three. There's three. And that's the magic number in Alcoholics Anonymous. Recovery, unity, and service. Mind, body, and soul, mind, body, and whatever. Spirit. Three. There's something about the three. The three-legged stool, there's amazing stuff that happens with the numbers three around Alcoholics Anonymous. And then when you get this stuff and you give it away, and that's what they did, and all of a sudden this little seed, this little mustard seed started to grow. And it didn't happen overnight. It took time. It took time. And then I was having another conversation with Bill C., who was late here last year. You know, there's a big, this big controversy everywhere now. There's big controversy all around AA. And they go, oh, the numbers are going down. And Bill was really, he said, the numbers in AA are going down, but if you look at the numbers in the other 12-step programs, they're going up. People come in here, and after about 5 years of sobriety, they figure out they probably, maybe, I don't know if I'm really an alcoholic, I might be a sex addict. I might be a gambling addict. I might be and all of a sudden, these other 12-step programs are growing, and AA is staying about the same, but people are leaving AA because they need to find their identification. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I really don't. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And some people read the big book and love it, and other people cannot read the big book because they don't love it. And I don't want them to not have that same gift that we have. You know, the language of the heart is still a language of the heart. When I say we're going to change things, are we going to change it? We're not going to change the big book as it is. We're going to try to make it like they have to, like the people in prison, you know, all the people in prison that are suffering and dying from alcoholism cannot read and cannot write. And they're trying to make a book, the same big book, so they can understand the words that we can freely understand. They're dumbing it down, as they say, so that people can get the same gift. That's progress. Wilson was just a wonderful guy about, he says, well, if that's what you think we need to do, that's what we need to do. Changes happen. The transformation happens. It happened inside of me. And I'm not going to stop somebody else from transforming, stop somebody else from finding this gift, and hopefully give it to somebody else. They might not speak my same language. I don't know these things. I'll tell one more story, and then I'll shut up. And this is really a big part of my whole transformation process inside of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's really, I'll probably tell a couple of stories, actually. But when I was about 8 years sober, I got, it was in the fall of 80, no, no, in the fall, I don't know what it meant. But I got really incredibly sick, just incredible. And they could not figure out what was wrong. I was a veteran, and they was at the VA, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. And they were testing me for everything. And it was just like, it was just dumbfounding them what was wrong with me. And I'm just like, just losing it spiritually, emotionally, and physically. And it was just, I don't know what's wrong. And I was giving up. I was really giving up. I can't do this anymore. It's too much for me to be alive. And they ran a whole bunch of tests. And on New Year's Day, which was my 8th anniversary, January 1st, 1997, I got a call from the VA. And they said, Mr. Connery, we need you to get into the VA right away. You've just tested positive for pneumocystis pneumonia. And I went, oh, my God. I said, that's really bad. So I went over to the hospital, trying to make a long story short. I went over to the VA on New Year's Day. I don't know if you know, nurses really, they get paid double and triple time, but they don't really want to deal with you. And this is my perception. This might not have been what happened, but I remember going into the VA, and all I heard was, what do you want? This is what I heard, right? And I said, yeah, Joe Conrad, the doctor called me to come in. She said, for what? You know, and all of a sudden, this little doctor, this beautiful little Australian doctor, come, Mr. Conrad, please come back to the room. Let me talk to you. And I said, doc, okay. And I'm walking back to the room, and she says, how long have you been HIV positive? I said, I had no idea. I knew when she gave me that news that I was really, really sick. And she says, oh, my God. She says, you're very, very sick. Do you know that? I said, I do. And she says, really, it's not very good. The prognosis was terrible at that time. And it was just like, and I'd been 8 years sober. And when I tell you I couldn't read, and I didn't sit all the way down. I came all the way in, but I didn't sit all the way down the way Ralph says. You know, sitting all the way down is really, it's really getting down into the comfort level of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll never forget this. I said, doc, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 8 years, and they talk about the word surrender, and I don't think I've ever really fully understood or comprehended it until this moment. And she says, well, you're very, very sick. She says, I don't know if we can pull you out of this. And I said, doc, I felt like I was in prison for a minute. Can I make a phone call? She says, sure you can. Go ahead, right ahead, you know. And I called my sponsor. I had a new guy at this time. And he said, Joe, congratulations on your anniversary. This is so good. And I said, Buzz, I'm dying. Sponsors are great. He goes, you can't die. I got to give you a cake at the men's meeting on Friday night. And I told him what was going on. He said, oh, God, man. Oh, God. And the irony was that I would always talk to Bus about how much I hated the footprints prayer. Remember, we used to have this old footprints prayer that was on all the walls. I thought it was the stupidest thing I ever heard. And he goes, Joe, your footprints are going to be showing. And I remember I went to the meeting that Friday night. I did. I asked the doc. I said, I got to get out of the hospital. She says, oh, my God, I don't know if we should do this. You're really, really, immune system is, I had nothing. And she says, but I know the love that Alcoholics Anonymous has. My husband is in there. You need to go. And I remember I went to bus. And I walked up to the door. Now, I told you about it. I didn't like greeters, right? So I walk up to the door, and there's a guy named Steve at the door. And he said, Joe, you look like hell. And I said, Steve, let me tell you about my week. And then this is when the footprints happened. He embraced me. Like, I don't think I'd ever let anybody have. And he goes, man, I love you. And I'm like, and you know what I was thinking of when you guys were applauding? That's what I was thinking of him at that door. And I walked in with Bus, and I sat in the, I'm the back row guy with my arms crossed, stay away from me, I don't want nothing you guys want. And Steve sat on the other side of the room, and he told the guy next to him, who told the guy next to him, who told the guy next to him. And I'm sitting there just feeling all full of shame. And Bus says, hey, look up. I said, what? He said, feel the love. And I looked up, and everybody was looking at me. And I'm like, oh, God. He said, Bus, I can't do this. He said, these guys love you, man. They love you. And I go, no, they don't. So they love you. I just had to come out as a gay man. It was like, it wasn't a secret to them. It was a secret to me. You know, that whole perception is like, and for the longest time when I would tell my story, I couldn't fully tell my story. This is the last story I'm going to tell. And then I'll never forget, I got a call from a guy named Michael, this kid Michael. You might know Michael B. He lives up in Covina. And Joe Hansen used to tape their every Sunday night. And Michael is a wonderful little kid. And I met him at a sober convention, and I didn't think anything of it. And we just chatted a little bit. I knew his sponsor and blah, 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 woof, woof, woof. That's it. And go on with life. And this one day, I'm driving to a fundraiser. We still do have a detox in San Diego. It's a detox for men, which is volunteered by AA. It's totally free, 10-day detox. When guys coming off the street, try to sober them up and get them to AA. And I was going to a fundraiser for that, and he called me, this kid Michael. And he said, hey, Joe, I need to talk to you about something. I said, I'm just pulling in. Let me call you back. And I called him back. I said, what's going on? He says, I was just listening to Paul McHugh, who was talking at the State Line Retreat. I go, oh, my God, I love Paul. He's a wonderful guy. Joe, I didn't call you to talk about Paul McHugh. What's going on? He said, well, you were at that retreat, too, and your CD was there. And I listened to your CD, and I went, oh. So what's going on? And he started crying. He said, I'm 8 years sober, and I just turned HIV positive, and I can't tell anybody. And here you are telling 1,000 people in Las Vegas that it's just past the soap, you know, or past the salt and pepper. And he goes, I can't believe that you have given me this gift of uncovering, discovering, and discarding. We share our story in a general way so somebody else can recover from their seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Not all the seemingly hopeless states of mind. The identification process isn't for everybody. It's for that one person who doesn't have that person to give them the hope with the faith that they had and they have shared that they can get to this other place, and which is only right here and right now. That's the other place. It's no other place. Don't be disappointed over this weekend if you don't walk away with something. Just, you know, you might walk away with a new friend. That's our job is done. You might walk away with a new idea. Our job is done. You might just walk away. Our job is still done. You came, you received, and you're going to give it away. You're going to be shocked. Some night, you're going to be sitting in a meeting, and somebody's going to be looking at you going, I can't stand this. And you're going to turn to him and go, let me tell you what I was like. Let me tell you what happened to me. Let me tell you what I'm like now. And how did you get there? And then you're probably going to say, you want to go to Denny's with me? You know, and it really, if you don't think this deal works, try it. And if you don't think God will help you, all you got to do is ask. That's the biggest thing. All you got to do is ask. And I am so glad you asked this, and my boy Cliff. You're going to learn how to be a man here this weekend. That's what's going to happen. And when you do that, that fourth dimension is going to be just this wonderful way of life. Thanks, guys. Ciao.